Hour number three on this Full Send Friday. Welcome in live from Greystone Golf Club in Dixon, Tennessee. Buck Rising here with you for another hour. Get you a little closer to your weekend. Talking some Titans and Seahawks through the final hour of this show. If you guys want to get involved, welcome to do so. The number is simple. 615-737-1045. 615-737-1045. We're going to have Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio here with us in just about 17 minutes, and we'll talk about the matchup in greater detail. But I want to start with a conversation that Lucas and I were having during a commercial break at some point this week. I'm not entirely sure when, but it was about the players who were active on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals, but the inactives list, the guys who were healthy scratches. And you go down the list as it was put out on game day, about an hour and a half before the game is when Jim Wyatt gets the inactives, tweets them out, and then all the rest of us vultures scurry and try to figure out who's playing and who's not. But you go through the list, and then you see, okay, second-round pick, Dylan Radins, who's not in the competition at right tackle, backup guard at this point. He's a healthy scratch, and you're not thrilled with that. You look at Josh Reynolds, who was pre-Julio Jones, your acquisition, your biggest acquisition to help bolster your skill position players at the wide receiver, and he is inactive, but he's not a healthy scratch. He's dealing with a variety of different issues, whether it's shoulder surgery that he's recovering from this past offseason, whether it's the Achilles that has been plaguing him throughout the course of the preseason and training camp, or whether it's what he was listed with on the injury report this week. And I don't know if Achilles qualifies as a foot injury, but it says foot injury on the injury report, so I don't know if that's the same Achilles situation. But not something that's ideal, right? You need depth at this point. It's so early in the season for you to be having to work with or work without parts that you need to be able to have success. And then there's Rashad Weaver, who has exceptional is probably too high a praise, but he has a good enough preseason to where people are talking about Rashad Weaver, where people are thinking that he's going to make legitimate contributions as the third pass rusher, and he's going to play not just on the outside, but he's going to play defensive line as well because he's a versatile piece, and he's capable of doing so. So you're thinking all of these things, and then you see him on the list as an inactive, and you're saying, what the hell? What's happening with the Titans, and why is their rotation Derek Roberson and Ola Adeniyi as opposed to Rashad Weaver, who, based on what fans saw with their own eyes, they're thinking, well, he can make a bigger impact than Derek Roberson as a situational rusher, and his impact should be great enough to keep him on the active roster as opposed to leaving Ola Adeniyi up, who's just going to primarily play special teams, even if he is a core special teams player. So, Lucas, what was your contention with this? Because it wasn't quite with the same vitriol that you were going on about the Vols and their recent usage of tight ends, the thing, and D. Beckwith's existence, whether it's real or imagined. Not with that same passion, with that same spite, but you were upset by this. You did seem perturbed.
Perturbed. I love you using the Blaine Bishop term there. Love when he says perturbed.
Blaine Bishop has just walked in and has immediately been swarmed by his adoring public. So we will see. You will hear Blaine and Mickey after this.
Well, I was perturbed because I got an answer. We talked to you about it. Talked to Rhett Bryan about it. It's because he wasn't going to make an impact on special teams. So my question is, let's say Rashad Weaver, if they don't feel like he can help them on special teams down the stretch through the course of the season, does that mean Rashad Weaver doesn't get a chance to make an impact and in effect make that kind of a waste of a draft pick in the fourth round? That was my question. Like, Rashad Weaver, if he does not play special teams this season, are we even going to see him? And if not, why draft Rashad Weaver? I understand there's a huge importance in special teams, but that was where my confusion was. Like, if he's not going to play special teams, are we going to see him at all?
So it doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be that kind of an ultimatum like you've just outlined it, right? Where you're saying if he doesn't play special teams, then he's not going to be an impact, and then the draft pick, which is a fifth-round draft pick, not a fourth-round draft pick, is a wash.
But that's what it was.
But it does matter for the level of investment that you're talking about, because you can't afford to have a non-impactful draft class 2 years in a row.
He was a fourth-round pick,
and that's what it's
pick,
trending towards. Okay, then I lied. Very good. Thank you for the correction. So it's not definitive like that. I think it's just going to depend on the matchups, right, where they're thinking that the Cardinals are going to play a hell of a lot more four wide receiver sets, what they call 10 personnel, than they ultimately did. And when they came out in two tight end sets and prepared to bully the Titans at the line of scrimmage to make sure that they were mitigating the Titans' defensive front as best they could, then it negated the impact of somebody like Derek Roberson, whereas Rashad Weaver would have been the better matchup in that situation. So you're going to see it vary from week to week. But, yeah, I mean, ultimately. So I told Lucas when I was driving out here to Dixon today, we were doing our pre-show call, I said I wish we could have that audio from Bussing with the Boys with Will Compton and Darren Bates, who are both special teams linebackers, and they were asking me why John Simon got cut. And I said, well, he doesn't play special teams. And those two, having made their career primarily out of playing special teams and their position second, they were in agreement that those are the reasons why outside, if you're not a starter, you have to have some value elsewhere on the field outside of just being the third edge rusher, because that's not enough to keep you up on game day because of the value and the bodies that the special teams units require. It's why if you see Dylan Radins as an inactive, if he's not on special teams and also he's not playing on Sunday, then there's no reason to have him out there on the field.
Well, that makes sense because Dylan Radins just isn't ready. We know he's not ready, but Rashad Weaver looked ready in the preseason. I think a lot of people were excited to see what kind of impact he could have off the edge.
Again, I think they read it wrong. I think they were prepared for lighter sets and lighter fronts than they were actually going to see against the Cardinals, and so they went with the guy who's better at rushing off the edge in certain situations, like Derek Roberson, where Derek Roberson does not always play special teams. At least that was the better matchup. And then when the Cardinals came out with the game plan that they did, it made a hell of a lot more sense to have Rashad Weaver out there on the field, even if his special teams impact is less than that of Derek Roberson or Ola Adeniyi, because they rarely keep more than three outside linebackers up, but they did on Sunday, and neither of them are Weaver, which should tell you that that's exactly what this situation was. That's how fine a line it is for dudes who aren't starters. And honestly, I mean, Kevin Byard played special teams for his first couple of years here, also as the starting safety before they found other depth to come in and kind of take his role, Amani Hooker, Chris Jackson, guy like that. That's what that whole process is like throughout the course of the NFL. Well, even if it doesn't make sense to fans because they're not thinking about special teams with that kind of value, that's how the coaches are thinking about it.
Then let me ask you this. What will it take for Rashad Weaver to see the field? Is it a personnel, a matchup thing against whatever offense they're going up against? Let's say this entire season they do not like him on special teams. They don't think he brings value there. What will it take for him to be on the active roster or on the game?
I literally just told you that. Were you not listening to the show? What happened there?
Repeat it then.
I said, yeah, it's going to be matchup dependent. I just had a whole spiel on that. It's going to depend from week to week.
Be more specific.
I literally just spent all of the time being specific on the personnel that Arizona played versus who was out there on the field and what they were expecting Arizona to run. Did you just not, not hear that whole bit?
In Seattle then, in week two, do you think we see Rashad Weaver on the 53?
I think it's more likely based on how poorly the rest of them played on Sunday. I think it's possible. The clearest indication that Rashad Weaver wasn't going to be active on Sunday was that he was Chandler Jones all week for the scout team. Like, he was the person getting the scout team reps. Whereas you see Racy McMath out there in a DK Metcalf jersey at practice, it's possible that Racy McMath is not active on game day because he's working scout teams all week. That's the same kind of, you look at those guys the same way, even if Rashad Weaver plays a position that has the potential to be more impactful than, say, Racy McMath does as the sixth or even seventh in certain situations wide receiver. Does that make sense? All right, very good. 615-737-1045. Lucas is fielding phone calls. So we will get to your phone calls here in just a second. Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio will join us. Just a reminder that we're live out here at Greystone Golf Club in beautiful Dixon, Tennessee for the Fight DMD Golf for a Cure event that's going on right now. The Fight DMD trial, if you need a little more information, is a 12-month double-blind placebo-controlled study to evaluate the effectiveness and safety of oral ifetroban in participants with Duchenne muscular dystrophy. That was way too many medical terms than I was prepared for. But it's a good cause. They're raising funds to try and come up with better treatment plans and better cure and the potential for a cure for a disease that has caused so many families so much strife. Go to fightdmdtrial.com for more information. In Murfreesboro, who wants to talk about Taylor?
Hey, yeah, words are hard, Buck. I know, I understand. And I just wanted to let you know that I like turtles.
That what?
He lost.
I don't know what happened.
He lost the signal. It was something about Taylor Lewan.
All right, very good. All right.
Good job, Corey.
I don't know. Great job, at you. All right. We'll get into the matchup in more detail. Maybe Lucas will get a more satisfying answer out of Mac than he did out of me, given that Coach Dave McGinnis was the head coach in the NFL for quite some time, as well as a coach across the league, as he likes to tell us, for 35-plus years. That's coming up next. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone. Welcome back in. Live from Greystone Golf Club here on 104.5 The Zone. That music means one thing. Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio, getting ready to break down the X's and O's of Titans and the Seahawks. They head to Seattle tomorrow. I got a 6 a.m. flight out to Lumen Field. I'm excited to see what happens in that game and whether the Titans can prevent an 0-2 start to their season. So we'll see where the matchups lie favorably, if any, for the Tennessee Titans. And we welcome in Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Like an extra set of pads, they've been protecting Tennesseans since 1947. Visit farmbureauhealthplans.com. Mac, how we living, my brother?
I'm doing good, Buck. You guys are out there doing a nice thing for a great cause.
Can't hear me.
Very cool. Can you hear me?
Yeah, no, we're excited about you. I sure can. I can hear you now. Sorry about that, Mac. No, it is a great cause, and we're happy to be out here at Greystone Golf Club. You guys, by the way, we're doing an incredible thing last night for a great cause at Nissan Stadium, calling that game between Waverly and White House. Now, it didn't go Waverly's favor, but to see Titans Radio become Tigers Radio for a night is something that I know those kids are not going to forget. What was that experience like for you, Mac?
Buck, it was absolutely fabulous. I mean, you know, when they approached us about doing this, you know, I think, you know, 13 days ago, and they approached us about doing it, and Mike Keith asked the entire, you know, Titans Radio crew, you know, what do you guys think? And we all said, we are all in. And for the night to culminate like it did, anybody that was there, anybody that listened, we've had some tremendous response. People around here just outstanding. And we did it, Buck. Lucas was there. Lucas was a big part of it. We did it just like we do a Titans Radio broadcast, you know, with Rhett Bryant, you know, the magic that he and Brad Willis and Philip Noel can do with a radio presentation is amazing. And then, of course, you know, Mike Keith was just fabulous. And he said, you know, he went back to his first days of broadcasting, doing high school games. And I really loved it. I enjoyed it. Plus, it's a great atmosphere, great setting, and really a good ball game too. And the thing that's important, and Mike Keith emphasized this, and then we'll move on, is that it's important to know that was a great event, and that was very, very pointed towards what was going on over there in the county and in Waverly. But the thing that's important is it's not over. We can't forget those people because they're going to be dealing with this for a long time, and we still need to be there,
right,
you know, as a group to help those people.
Yes, and please don't forget that you can go and support the people of Waverly and the surrounding counties at wearewaverly.org. They are taking donations. They have plenty of equipment for the football team, apparently. They've gotten that in spades, but they are still welcoming other kinds of donations to help that community get back out on its feet. A really cool effort by Titans Radio and the entire crew to make sure that sounded just like a Titans game, and it absolutely did. I've seen the feedback as well, Mac. People couldn't have appreciated it more. So,
that's great, just a
Lucas, tremendous job by all of you, really love to hear
Lucas deserves a lot of credit, too, because everybody was pitching in up there at 104.5, so it was great.
Yeah. So let's talk about this game between the Titans and the Seahawks, Mac. They
will
head out to Seattle tomorrow, and they will try and attempt to not start their season 0-2. Where did the game plan for the Cardinals differ for you than what you may have expected to see? Because I saw a bunch of 12 personnel when I went back and watched that game, Mac, and And I was not expecting them to run their offense the way that they did on Sunday, outside of the principles that we know they like to operate in.
Well, the Cardinals, you know, but of course, you know, Kingsbury has been morphing to that to begin with, because he knew that just complete, you know, that complete spread the field and just try to fire it everywhere is not going to work in this league. You've got to be able to still get some edges on the run, and you still got to be able to get a play action pass that people have to honor if you're hitting on all cylinders like they were. So that wasn't a surprise. I mean, he started that at the end of last year too, when you go back and start watching their tape, you know, so that really wasn't a surprise. I mean, they executed it, and plus they've got a quarterback back there that we talked about it, and we talked about it, you know, for quite a bit of time, and we can get off of that game pretty quick. But you know, he can make so many off schedule plays. There were some off schedule plays that he and his receivers, you know, in critical times, they performed. I mean, they executed it, and the Titans couldn't stop it at that moment.
Yeah, that was clear and evident to everybody on the field, certainly. So from that standpoint, Mac, I thought a lot of the defensive principles that they were trying to execute were working at the start of that game, and then as it continued to progress and the score got more and more out of hand or further out of reach, that the defense started to struggle in a way that we all saw on the field. I did think that Christian Fulton played a lot of good snaps, and I saw a lot of good snaps from guys like Harold Landry and the players up front. But now Russell Wilson comes in a new offense, and one that he didn't seem like he missed a beat in, now that Shane Waldron is calling the plays, bringing over that style of play from the Los Angeles Rams. What is the difference to you in defending a guy like Kyler Murray versus now Russell Wilson, who's played this game at a lot higher level than Kyler has yet to reach?
Well, Buck, I mean, I've defended, you know, as a coach, as a defensive coach, Russell Wilson ever since he came into this league, and being in the same division there, you know, in the NFC West for 5 years. So when he first came in, he was a lot like Kyler Murray. He was a little bit more off schedule, a little bit more stick his foot in the ground at that first read, not there, take off and use, you know, the extreme maneuverability and the escapability that he had. And so, you know, when we went in there to the Rams, we started to a very bad team. We started building, you know, that team to try to counteract that offense, because they were the leaders and the kings of that division when we came into there. And what we were able to do, you know, was be able to get some guys, you know, up front that couldn't, you know, you're never going to get anybody fast enough to catch him, but you can get some guys to try to cage him. And the other thing is about Russell Wilson that you say that is so correct now. Look, he's a better quarterback now than he was. I mean, he was just a very talented athlete when he first came in. Now he's a better quarterback. I mean, he's a much better quarterback now. I mean, after 9 years, and you know what the guy has done, he's developed, you know, into a guy that makes his reads, that still manipulates and works the pocket, still has the wheels to get out. But they designed boots for him to get outside, and he's able to read out coverages now. All of those things that you have to learn when you come into the National Football League. Kyler Murray is not there yet, but Kyler Murray has still got the extreme athleticism that will. You know, when he's hitting on all cylinders, that always works. But you ask me about Russell Wilson, the difference, he's a better quarterback now. He's a mature quarterback.
Coach Dave McGinnis of Titans Radio is here with us on 104.5 The Zone, breaking down the Titans' trip to Seattle this week, this Sunday. And you can hear, of course, Titans Radio's broadcast here on 104.5 The Zone. The coverage beginning at 3:25, kickoff rather, at 3:25. Coverage beginning at 2:25 with Titans Countdown, where you can hear the entire cast and crew breaking down the game before kickoff begins. So, Mac, to that end, for Seattle's defense, they look so that the young pieces that they've added look to be working in concert together against an Indianapolis Colts offensive line that does look a lot different this year, but has been one of the better ones in this league. I was shocked by surprised by how good Darrell Taylor looked going up against Braden Smith, the former Tennessee outside linebacker / edge rusher, playing as a down defensive lineman there. I thought he gave Braden Smith the business throughout the course of that game. What are you seeing from the Seahawks front right now?
Well, I mean, you talk about Darrell Taylor being a young player. Rasheem Green also, you know, when you look at him, the way that they maneuvered and moved him around, I mean, he's – and they rotate their people. You know, Ken Norton Jr. is the defensive coordinator, and Pete Carroll has always rotated his defensive front. Pete Carroll has changed offensive coordinators, you know, in his tenure there, but the basic defense of that cover three match is still his. And with that, what they've evolved to, you know, depending on the type of people they're playing and who they're playing, they'll move up into a solid front sometimes, cover both guards, cover the center, put two edges out there. And then in his defense, Pete Carroll has always had an eraser. Well, that guy now is Adams, okay? You know, their safety. And that's the guy that he will move around to be a low hole robber, to be a middle of the field robber, to be a guy that they can bring inside or outside on any kind of pressures they want to bring. In that cover three match coverage, you know, that they play a lot. And then Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner is still, to me, one of the better key and diagnosed linebackers in this league, and has really, really always been a very solid player since he's been there. But the young players, and he's always had young guys that he's used just to rotate in there. And they may not be dominant as an individual, but as a group, when they start rolling and they start separating the score, then that's when they go to work. And Ken Norton Jr. has had a proclivity ever since he's been the coordinator there. He will bring some heat, so you got to be ready for that.
Yeah, Mac, I looked at that performance, and it felt like they got back to the style of play that Seattle was famous for when they made those Super Bowl runs and did win a Super Bowl over the Denver Broncos a couple of years ago, where the game that Pete Carroll wants to play is predicated off the success and the strength of their rushing attack, the play action passing from Russell Wilson, and a sound, solid defense up front. What are they on the back end though right now in that secondary? Because from just on paper, and I know that's not where the game is played or won, but on paper I like the Titans wide receiver matchup with these Seattle defensive backs, assuming that they can find some kind of rhythm in the passing game that eluded them last week.
Well, that's what you have to do. And to be able to do that, I mean, if you're talking about and you want to isolate corners, then you've got to force middle of the field defense in one-on-ones. And to do that, you've got to be able to run the ball, because if not, then they will lay off. And even in that cover three match, you know, you can lay off that fourth guy, whoever he is, you know, and Adams being that guy, that all of a sudden, if you get the score separated real big, then you're going to have a hard time getting over the top of anybody, just because they're going to back up and give you that if the score is separated. So what do you have to be able to do? And you have to be able to, you know, to establish the run. And that's what the Titans were unable to do last Sunday, is establish a run game. And if you can't do that, and on top of that, the score starts getting separated, then you're putting yourself into a whole other dimension of what you have to do to catch up and try to get ahead.
Coach Dave McGinnis, 104.5 The Zone, breaking down the Seahawks and the Titans coming your way on 104.5 The Zone this Sunday. Make sure you're listening to Titans radio coverage that will begin with the Lee Company countdown to kickoff. I'll get you started at what is it, 12:25, I believe, I'm on the air before all of the other pregame coverage begins with Blaine and Mickey and Kevin Dyson, Coach Mack and Mike Keith, Rhett Bryan, Amy Wells as well. So, Mac, with the offensive line for the Tennessee Titans, that was a big talking point throughout the course of the week, Taylor Lewan specifically, but it wasn't like the rest of the offensive linemen for the Titans played up to their standard as well. How were you seeing Arizona kind of try and take away what the Titans like to do best, which is establish the play-action passing, the run-action passing, off of their rushing attack? And instead, it seems like Arizona was able to pretty well neutralize them and find ways to get them off their game early.
Well, they're winning their one-on-ones up front, Buck, and that's nothing new, you know, for the Titans for the last 2 years. And I mean, you know, I don't go back and look at the Pro Football Reference or whatever, you know, the stats are, but I know it just what I'm seeing, you know, when I'm breaking things down. I mean, they've been facing 8 and 9 man fronts for a long time, you know, with Derrick Henry, and that's what people are going to do. I mean, they're going to deploy a front, and people are going to flog gaps. And you still have got to be able to break runs with that stuff. And if you don't, then they'll continue to do it. They've done that against this offense for a while, and the offense has still been very productive. So it boils down to what you have to be able to do, Buck. You have to win your one-on-ones. Because when you're really talking about a run game in the National Football League, especially early on conflict downs, it's about winning your one-on-ones. And that's what has to happen.
Yeah, certainly something that they'll look to improve on heading into this game on Sunday. Mac, I really appreciate you taking the time. We always enjoy our visits with you. Safe travels to Seattle, my brother, and I will see you in the booth before kickoff.
Look, you travel safe also. Always enjoy being on with you, and I'll see you in the press box there. Have you been to Seattle for a game before?
No, this is my first time. I could not be more excited to see that stadium.
Let me tell you, let me give you a little tip. Bring some earplugs.
I'll make sure I have them ready. Coach Dave McGinnis here with us
see
on
you.
104.5 The Zone. You can hear their coverage of the Titans and the Seahawks on Sunday. Always a pleasure to catch up with Mac. So we've gotten some tweets about it. I don't know where the delay is happening between me and Coach Mac, but it sounded like we were talking over each other. We're getting it figured out on our end here on 104.5 The Zone, but we'll continue this conversation about the Titans and the Seahawks coming up next, and also something that's happening with Urban Meyer on the internet, something that is well worth your time to get to before we wrap this week up and we do the polls. That's up next. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone. Sports to my attention about Urban Meyer and his house and something that's being done in the home of the Myers, and now Shelley Meyer, his wife, has responded to it. She's not happy with Barstool. Explain to the people what you texted me during the commercial break.
Well, yeah, all these pictures are coming out from inside Urban Meyer's house, and the biggest thing that sticks out is the one coffee table in the middle of their living room that is just filled with about 45 family photos framed of Urban and his family and his wife, which is lovely, but I saw somebody put out that it looks like a home of a 90-year-old woman. I mean, it looks like I half expected all the framed photos to just be all of Tim Tebow, but there's just too many pictures on that coffee table.
I don't know. They look like hoarders. The Myers look like they're keeping literally everything that's ever been given to them in the history of their family, their friends, or all of the previous football stops that they've had. And still, you know, what are the memories of their 1 year in Jacksonville going to be? Because you know it's not lasting any longer than a year. And Urban Meyer is soon to be the next head coach of USC.
Austin in the chat says Suburban Meyer.
It's Suburban. All right, rack him. He deserves it. Unbelievable. All right, let's do some polls.
Down goes Frazier. Down goes Frazier. The polls have closed and the votes have been tallied. It's the segment where bias takes over and nuance goes to die. Now, here's your favorite Buck Rising Show correspondent, Lucas Penn. Make that poll Zika.
Thank you, Rhett Root, and happy
birthday. Go get him, buddy.
Kirby texted me, said, don't hate. I don't know what he's talking about. Did the NFC East play a fun...
Told him he looks like a peanut in front of a live audience. That's what happened.
Well, that was you. Did the NFC East play a fun football game last night? 86% say yes. I'm sorry. I support the NFC East. I rebuke in the name of Jesus the idea of defunding the NFC East. It brings us quality entertainment every weekend, even if we're just making fun of it, and it gave us a great game last night.
Why did you say that like such a stiff? You said, I rebuke that in the name of Jesus. Like, really,
yeah, I rebuke
really,
that in the
name like
of
emphasizing
Jesus.
Your words there. Thank you, Caleb Farley. We appreciate your help. Yes, no, we didn't even talk about Thursday Night Football last night, and I was very excited to do that because it was just a disaster of a game. It was so sloppy, so disorganized. The Giants lost in an unthinkable fashion for anybody who is not a Giants fan. That has to be such a suffering to be a fan of that particular organization. With the lack of discipline and the penalties and the poor offensive line play, I mean, I think the only thing that makes you feel better about the Isaiah Wilson experience, if you're a Titans fan, is that Andrew Thomas on the left side of the Giants line looks like hell too. So that's the only thing that you can salvage, is that both of the Georgia tackles look really, really bad in retrospect after that draft class.
I mean, it's just fun. It's just a fun division. I'm sorry. Even when they all suck, it's fun. Like last year at the end of the season, the thing when the Eagles took out Jalen Hurts and basically tried to lose a football game before eventually firing Doug Peterson, that was funny, and it gave us quality entertainment for like the whole week following that.
No, defund the NFC East. That is the position of this show. we are on a mission to defund the NFC East.
What do you want to learn from the Vols against Tennessee Tech? Michael says, can they connect on the deep ball consistently? Goody says, so am I a Vols fan by proxy now? Michael says, I would like to see an SEC team dominate an inferior opponent, win the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball, dominate. A QB hit open receivers down the field, thinking of Florida next week. Milton can't complete balls to open receivers against Bowling Green and Pitt. UF will destroy UT 65-3. A lot of emotions in that tweet.
Yeah, no, I will listen. This is a very emotional fan base. They're in a fragile spot. They're scared. They're frightened. They're backed into a corner, and they don't have a quarterback. Who's worth a damn? Like, it's a tough scene. They're like
lashing out on that one.
Point Balls fans. Oh, I mean, how could you not? I pity him. I truly do. You know, what I'm looking to see is if they can find a quarterback that can complete the layup passes and not leave 21 points on the board. I don't care who the quarterback is. Just don't look awful doing it. Don't make – I have no investment other than it's better for business if the Vols are good. And I was pulling my hair out with every Joe Milton missed touchdown throw. Because, and I can't imagine what that life is like to live for a decade or a decade plus since Lane Kiffin left the University of Tennessee in the middle of the night and the mattresses were on fire.
Jake Irish says, I want to learn that Milton can be accurate downfield or that Hooker has earned the starting job. I would like a resolution there one way or the other. I think a lot of people are on that same page.
So inevitably, one way or another, they will not see that resolution. And of course, this will all be in flux before Florida week because such is life.
Josh says, he wants patience, and then he says, go Vols. Sam Smith says, can any quarterback complete a wide-open deep ball?
Vols fan, Godspeed.
Right. Lon says, a clear front runner at the QB position is what he wants.
Are you eating something? What are you chewing right now while we're trying to do a radio show?
No, I'm not eating anything. I don't know what you're hearing. Aaron Field says, I would love to see a Tennessee Tech win. Josh says, we probably won't learn very much.
Yeah, very good. What else do we have?
Which positional matchup on offense favors the Titans in Seattle? Crazy Pellet says Tannehill's accuracy when he needs to thread the needle. Also, I believe if they spread the offense, like Mark Mariani pointed out, then we can own the space better with the weapons we have, and it'll give the Titans' shaky offensive line a chance.
Yeah, Mark Mariani, for those of you who missed it, he had a really good film breakdown on his Twitter account of what the Titans were doing and what the ineffectiveness of their running scheme, basically, and why they were, you know, just banging their heads against a table for four quarters against the Arizona Cardinals without figuring out, hey, we can spread the field, we can spread the defense out a little bit, we can come out in 11 personnel and make life a hell of a lot easier on the running back who's getting into a car wreck on every play and running into Chandler Jones and getting stuck in his face mask every time they tried to run those outside zone concepts. And then, of course, their play-action passing suffered as a result because they couldn't get anything going on the ground.
Both Kyle and Frankie say they like the matchup between Titans wide receivers and Seahawks corners.
Yeah, that's probably the matchup that favors them the most at this point. It's not a very established Seattle secondary. Their defensive front looks much, much improved with the talent that they brought in. Alongside Puna Ford, who's one of the best defensive tackles in football right now. Darrell Taylor looked like an absolute stud against Braden Smith, who is a very, very well-paid offensive tackle in the NFL. But the secondary is not, this is not the Legion of Boom. This is something that can be exploited, you know, provided that the offensive coordinator comes out and takes advantage of the matchups, which would involve his very, very acclaimed wide receiving core that nobody has seen yet do anything other than A.J. Brown catching a desperation touchdown.
And Cole Claxton, building off of that, says he likes Anthony Firkser's chances this weekend.
Yeah, I don't. He's playing Bobby Wagner. So, like the Vols fans against Tennessee Tech, Godspeed.
Which positional matchup on defense favors the Titans in Seattle? Crazy Pellet says D-line. That's about it. Fulton will probably be the star of the defense again, though. Was he Christian Fulton, the biggest bright spot of week one against their? Not that there were many, but you think he was the biggest one?
Yeah, so if you're saying biggest bright spot, that would assume that there were other bright spots for the Titans against the Cardinals, and there were simply not. There were simply not. They got their asses kicked for four quarters, except for Christian Fulton, who held it together pretty well on the outside. It was, you know, he is promising, right? I think the book's still out on him. You're still trying to learn what his skill set is and how comfortable he can be on the outside. across from Jackrabbit, who he had an unenviable assignment, which is to basically trail DeAndre Hopkins for that game. And DeAndre Hopkins very easily gave him the business, as he has done so many defensive backs in the NFL. But Christian, and honestly, I thought Harold Landry, I think the defense up front is getting a bad rap just because Kyler Murray makes so many front seven players look foolish the way that he did the Titans. But I don't think there's a matchup on the field that favors them on defense. I think that Russell Wilson could have a day.
Well, on that note, Kyle likes the matchup of the Titans defensive line and pass rush against that Seahawks offensive line.
I don't know. I mean, until we keep hyping up Jeffrey Simmons, but until I see it one-on-one, he's capable. He's hugely talented. He's got all kinds of potential. But Jeffrey Simmons, at this point, he's not Aaron Donald in the way that people have discussed him. It's just the tape is not there. And, yeah, you can talk about double teams all you want, but at some point you have to be an impact player. And to this point, Jeffrey Simmons, his impact is not – it's there, but it's just not in a transcendent way the way that I think Titans fans believe it to be.
Cam the Boss is with you, Buck. He does not like any positional matchups between the Titans defense and the Seahawks offense. Okay, last one of the day, and I'm not going to lie, I failed to put this to a poll because he texted me mid-show and I just didn't get around to it. It was going to be Colts on Hard Knocks, yes or no. I didn't put it up, but we hadn't even talked about the fact that they're doing an in-season Hard Knocks with the Indianapolis Colts.
What kind of trash is that? Blaine Bishop is here. He doesn't have a microphone in front of him, but he's shaking his head, so of course you can hear Blaine and Mickey's thoughts about this coming up next, because they are probably going to echo mine. Who needs more Hard Knocks? Like, there's nothing about the Dallas Cowboys that was interesting this year. They're going to do it in season with the Indianapolis Colts. What do I care how bad Carson Wentz looks after 6 weeks of football when the NFL, the Colts aren't even going to let any of the good stuff, the stuff that actually matters, the actual behind-the-scenes stuff, out because they have final approval. And HBO is just, you know, just something that the league is using to circulate more football more of the time. I don't need more Hard Knocks. I've seen J.J. Watt at 4 in the morning flipping a tire while the sprinklers are going on the practice field. I don't need more of that just because it's in the season. Get rid of it. I'm so tired of Hard Knocks. That's the show. I sound like a cranky old man, but it's been a lot of fun out here at Greystone Golf Club. Many thanks to them for having us. The conversation about the Titans, the Seahawks, the Vols, and Tennessee Tech, and much more will continue through this afternoon. And coming up next, Blaine and Mickey.